President's State of the Union address in Washington tonight. Without further delay, let's get right to it. According to a study in the medical journal JAMA Network Open, men between the ages of 18 to 29 in the 60624 zip code on the west side have a greater chance of getting shot and killed than U.S. soldiers that were in combat in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Cam Buckner, day one in office, what will you do for residents of that zip code?
Listen, the first thing we have to do, Paris, is make sure that we are serious about public safety, about dealing with the root issues that happen in our community. We have a murder rate that's way too high, a clearance rate that's way too low, and we have not done the work. In fact, we're spending $2 billion a year on policing in this city. In 2021, we had 797 homicides in this city with a 50% clearance rate. That means we're spending $4 million per clear case in this city. We have to put money and resources into organizations doing the work on the ground to make sure that we can create some real semblance of safety and justice in all of our communities.
And I want to get to the clearance rate in a second, but Paul Vallis, given that dire statistic on the west side, what will you do day one in office?
Well, day one, I would open the schools through the dinner hour on weekends over the holidays and bring all community-based organizations, faith-based organizations, park districts into the schools. It's something we did in the 90s. We literally had close to 200,000 kids in school through the dinner hours and on weekends, and obviously during the holidays to get the kids off the street, because there was a significant spike in crime really since 2019, in part because the schools were shut down for so long. So that's something you could do immediately. The second thing I would do is really focus on returning citizens, because there's really not a strategy to address the issue that there are so many individuals returning to these very same communities for which there is no housing, there is no transitional programs back into the economy, there's no adult ed occupational training programs. I did significant work for the Justice Department and Sally Yates on just that type of an issue. So I think those are two things that we could do, obviously besides pushing the police officers down to the local beats so we have beat integrity so that every police beat has a police car covering it.
Speaking of police officers, Mayor Lightfoot, the current amount of police officers is about 11,600 on the force right now. Some folks say that's down about 1,000 from an ideal number. There were more officers hired this year than any year since 2017. Do you believe that the police department needs to hire more officers, and how will you ensure that only qualified candidates are hired?
Well, we absolutely need to hire more officers, which is why we stood up a year and a half ago under Superintendent Brown's leadership, a full-time recruiting team. This is one of the toughest times in the country to recruit, and mayors all over the country are experiencing that difficulty. We made great progress and success because of the intentionality around literally leaving no stone unturned. We looked at the processes used to hire people. We solved some problems there. We've gone to HBCUs and work with the military. We're changing the standards, not lowering the standards, but we're doing everything we can to get as many applicants that then yield into recruits in the academy. But I got to pick up on one thing that Paul Vallis just said. He's repeatedly said throughout these debates that he was hired by Sally Yates to work on criminal justice reform. That's simply not true. What he was hired to do through a consulting firm, not him specifically, is to work on raising up GED rates for federal prisoners. That's a far cry from being hired to get into policing.
Ms. Vallis, I'll let you address this in a second, but I do need to move on. Willie Wilson, more police officers, and how will you ensure that they are qualified candidates?
Well, first of all, you have to start with the root of the problem. You got to get law and order first in the community. You obviously make investment into the people. From a perspective, making sure that the foundation is there in terms of job, you know, matter of fact, training, et cetera, et cetera. This particular mayor right now have lost it, you know, to be honest with you. She didn't know how to do a job. And all she come and make excuses why people continue to die on the street every day. We will take the handcuffs off the police officer. We'll get law and order. We'll take some of these rules off so they can do the job. And at the same time, make the investment within the community.
Brandon Johnson, you've talked about coming out against hiring more officers, diverting some of that police budget to alternate response for mental health calls. How much do you want to cut the police budget by, and what will that money go toward?
Yeah, what I want to do is actually invest in people, because that's what the city of Chicago deserves. The safest cities in America invest in people. You mentioned the west side of Chicago. I'm raising a family there. You know, the fact of the matter is you actually have more black men incarcerated than were enslaved in 1865. When our country had an unemployment rate, white men in this country of 30%. Our country called it a national crisis. We have to invest in people. The fact of the matter is we need public safety today. These folks are not being honest with you. The reason why we don't have enough police officers is because we're asking them to be social workers, therapists, mayor's counselors. Almost 40% of the calls that come through 911 are mental health crises. I'm actually investing in having social workers, therapists to show up on the front line to actually free up law enforcement to deal with the more severe crime that happens in the city of Chicago.
In fact,
last
point
here, almost over 40% of the violence that happens in the city of Chicago, it happens in 6% of the city of Chicago, the neighborhood that I'm raising my three children in. And so investing in people and having a holistic, comprehensive program is actually what the city of Chicago deserves.
There is a pilot program right now to have mental health first responders on some of those calls. Show of hands, who would continue that program?
I'm going to expand it.
It's a call responder model. What we need is a responder model where people actually who have the training show up, not somebody with a gun and a badge next to somebody with a clipboard, but someone with the training to deal with the issues that are going on in our community.
All right, so you... Let's get Alderwoman King. You said you'd expand that program.
I along with several colleagues, helped to start that program. We, talked to the mayor about making sure we got more money towards that, but the program hasn't been expanded. Over 50% of calls to 911 are for nonviolent issues like mental health insecurities, like homeless insecurities. So we have to do that. But clearly, when you talked about Austin, statistics, lawsuits tell us that police aren't in the areas where we need them the most. And the response times are disproportionately impacting under-resourced communities. So we need to put police in all of our communities. We have a plan that does that day one. Up to 50% more police in the communities in all of our communities.
In fact, some of those 911 response times can be over an hour, but I want to talk about the clearance rate. That was brought up, Jamal Green. According to the UFC Crime Lab, the murder clearance rate, the amount of murders that get solved, hovers around 40%. For non-fatal shootings, that's about 5%. One of the reasons is that community members do not come forward to talk to police out of fear or distrust. How do you 100%. Change that?
Let me just say this. I really wish I saw the urgency for our elected officials here in the jobs that they're doing now. Chuy Garcia is at the State of the Union. He's doing his job in Congress. And I wish a lot of the folks here would do so. Brandon Johnson talks about our pure response model that we moved forward earlier than anyone else. And he's commissioner of Austin. And all of the money in his district goes to Oak Park. And so we want to see some urgency right now in the city of Chicago when it comes to public safety. And when you talk about the clearance rate, you do have to make sure that you're investing in people. And so what we would do is we would invest in a block club infrastructure program throughout the city of Chicago so that folks can take ownership on their blocks and actually be on the front lines of what's going on. We would also create a youth intervention department and a pure responder model of social workers so that police can actually deal with the violence.
All right, I need to bring Alderman Sawyer in here. The clearance rate, 5% for non-fatal shootings, only around 40% for fatal shootings. What do you do to change that?
It's abhorrent, and we'd have to do better. What we need to be doing is making sure that we provide, one, opportunities for those that that are not yet involved in criminal justice system. But with police, we want to make sure that we're keeping them laser focused in their positions. We have to make sure we give them all the resources necessary. And what I've done, for example, is institute a ordinance for the Office of Gun Violence Prevention, which provides a witness protection program, what you're speaking of. People are scared. People don't want to say something, and far too often, they're asked questions in front of the offenders on the street. In the summertime, a detective will walk up and say, "Do you know who did it?" They're going to say, "No, I don't know," because the person that did it is watching them. We have to do better in response times, responses, and making sure that they're safe so that we can get that information to go back and forth so that we can reduce.
I see your hands, Mr. Vallis and Mayor Leib. I need to get to Brandis Friedman, who's live in Chicago. You all have a chance to address. Brandis Friedman is live in Chicago's Austin community. Brandis.
Yeah, that's right, Paris. So I am at Bethel New Life in Austin. And, I've talked to a few folks who are here about what some of their concerns are. One of them in particular is concerned about making sure that Chicago, her neighborhood in particular, remains affordable. She feels that she and some of her neighbors have been priced and pushed out of the community as property and therefore property taxes. The values and the taxes continue to rise. Other folks who are, concerned about opportunities, options outside of policing to address the violence that that Austin and other communities in Chicago experience. Also, hearing from some folks who are concerned about making sure that the next mayoral administration is full of people who are representative of Chicago and the community versus people who are from the outside, may not quite understand the lay of the land. Paris, I want to get to a question from someone who is here, though. Her name is Mary Nelson. She has been in Austin and West Garfield Park as a resident since 1965, so not very long. Mary Nelson, thanks so much for joining us. What is your question to the candidates?
I'd like to ask the Mayor, how are you going to make sure that our voices in the community, as you make decisions around schools and transit and parks and all the rest of it, our voices are heard in your decisions?
Mayor Lightfoot?
I'm happy to respond to that. And in Austin, what we've actually seen is remarkable progress in bringing down both homicides and shootings. We started an initiative back in the summer of 2019 called the Community Safety Coordination Center. And what we've done is looked at the 15 neighborhoods who are driving 50% of the violence, one of which, of course, is Austin. And what we saw over the course of last year was not the 14% down in homicides or 20% down in shootings. We saw a floor of 24% and up to 50% in neighborhoods like Austin. And how do we get there? We got there, of course, by listening to the people in the community and asking them, what will it take to keep you safe? And so we would apply, in answer to the Austinites' question, we would apply the same concept on every single issue as we have done, going into the community, asking the community questions, and making sure that the policies that come back, the resources that come back, if I can just finish, that the resources that come back are responsive to what the community has said that we need. The whole of city, the whole of city government response is how we've made progress.
I need to move on to a similar topic. Paul Vallis, the police department is under a federally mandated consent decree for reform. You've called the consent decree an excuse to avoid proactive policing. By saying something like that, are you sending a message to officers that they don't have to comply with the reforms in that decree?
Well, first of all, I've never said that. I said that the consent decree is a floor, is a floor, not a ceiling. So I've pointed out that the consent decree needs to be fully implemented, and it's really not. I mean, you're not filling the police vacancies. There's no health and wellness strategy for the police. The ratios of sergeants to officers, it's supposed to be 1 in 10, and it's 1 in 30. They're doing pilot projects. And then, of course, the professional development. I mean, the articles have been pretty specific about what is lacking in terms of implementation of the consent decree. I might also point out that the contract that I came in to help negotiate, the 8-year contract with the police department, and there were close to 2,500 police officers prepared to retire had they waited another year for the pay, included all the provisions that were being demanded that were present in the sergeant's contract that was agreed to. So when I came in and I took that responsibility, I said I would do it for two reasons. Number one, that the sergeant provisions, accountability provisions that were in the sergeant contracts be included in the base contract. And number two, that I not be compensated for it. And
all right, so you're saying you will make sure you implement the reforms of the consent decree. Willie Wilson, this brings me to some comments that you've made that have made news. You've doubled and tripled down on the statement that you want police to be able to hunt suspects down like rabbits. I want you to clarify. Say it's an unarmed teenager fleeing from the police. Do you believe police should be able to chase that person on foot and potentially shoot them?
Well, first of all, let me just correct you. I made the comment, but I also made it that I lost a son that was killed. All right? You didn't put that in there. All right? The one who committed the crime, I said to hunt him down like a rabbit. Okay?
So someone people, who's...
Wait a minute.
Say it's an unarmed teenager fleeing police.
Let me just finish it right here now. I'm just trying to put the record straight, all right? My kid was lost from gun violence. A lot of people right now, kids are lost to gun violence. Parents right now is scared. These particular people walking around on the street still haven't been caught. Right.
But I'm talking specifically about like an unarmed teenager. That situation.
Well, we're not. I'm just trying. But
that's
to put
my
it
question,
straight.
Sir.
Unarmed teenager.
Yes. Did your comments? Did you mean them to include that?
If you commit a crime, you hurt somebody, you kill somebody, they should be hunted down like a rabbit. That's what I said. That's what I meant. The people who done killed somebody else, done committed a crime. All right. So that's exactly what I said.
We could ask this in every forum. He said what he said.
What he just said is absolutely outrageous. Because what he's saying is that because you have the pain of loss of a victim of gun violence, as unfortunately way too many people in the city have, that we should turn our police department into a group of vigilantes to hunt down and kill people instead of inviting by the Constitution and giving them their day in court. What Mr. Wilson says is outrageous, should be condemned by every single person in this room, not just on this stage, because we can't have that happen in our city. Okay. We cannot turn our police department.
I'm going to give Alderman King a chance to respond here.
I wish the mayor would be more forthcoming, because what's happening in Austin, you know, there are lawsuits that just happened a year ago that to suggest that we don't have the officers in the right place at the right time. So we need to make sure that our officers are more equitably distributed, first of all. Second of all, we have a plan that day one, we can institute more officers, up to 50%, in the neighborhoods, in all neighborhoods where we need them. We know that they're not the only solution. We have to get to the root causes, so we have a plan for violence intervention as well. But we have to get to the immediacy of crime now. These plans are, and what the mayor is saying is not forthcoming.
I need to move along to a similar issue. The city is in the midst of reforming its historically problematic gang database. Cam Buckner, if you were mayor, would you institute a gang database, and what would it look like?
Absolutely not. The gang database has not made us safer. In fact, it's made people in communities, many of whom look like me, not be able to walk around this city and participate in a way that's fair and equitable. The fact that we are still going down this road, the fact that we have, like you said earlier, a consent decree that is only 5% complied with, 5%. That means we're a 95% failure. If we're going to do things differently in this city, we've got to change the way we operate. And that has to start on day one.
It's about 5% in full compliance. And Mayor Lightfoot, this is happening under your police superintendent, David Brown. Does he wear the jacket for this low level of compliance?
That's just absolutely not correct. If you look at the last report that came out from the independent monitor, we were at almost 80% compliance.
5% full compliance.
5% full compliance.
We are about 80% in compliance overall, and we have moved faster than any other city in the same period of time. So we can.
The officer that's over the consent decree.
I want to get to this. Let me bring Jamal Green in here.
Fire the Proud Boy, not the officer that's over the consent decree.
I appreciate that all these folks want to throw bombs from the cheap seats. The fact of the matter is, the facts are really clear. We are in compliance. We're improving our compliance every single day. And this nonsense that you're hearing from some of these folks is really completely belied by the facts.
Jamal Green, can I bring you in here? The original question was about the gang database. Would you have a gang database? And if so, what would it look like?
No. No, we would not have a gang database under our administration. We're going to actually do what works. And what works is making sure that young people have opportunity in the neighborhoods. We're talking a lot about police here, but I don't hear enough about our young people. Our young people are walking around neighborhoods hopeless, and they need opportunity, which is why we presented a plan to give 13 to 25-year-olds apprenticeships year-round. We're going to open up the schools throughout the day and on weekends. We're going to institute trade and tech hubs throughout the city of Chicago. We need to start preparing our young people and giving them alternatives and making sure they can be productive and mentoring them and giving them the mental health services that they need, and stop talking about police. We need to invest in people.
This was the only person on this stage that actually got rid of the gang database is me. We got rid of it at the County Board of Commissioners. Do you know there was an 8-year-old on the gang database and there was a 108-year-old on the gang database? That is the oldest G in America. And it's proven to fail. 75% of the folks on the gang database live on the west side of Chicago. And many of them live in my neighborhood. I can tell you what's not working. Of someone who was actually raising a family in Austin, all of the policies up here are calling for the same tired politics that have left our families behind. My wife and I have had to cover our children countless times because of gunshots that have rang right outside our front door. I've released a budget plan. No one else has done that. I've released one of the most comprehensive public safety plans that not only get at the root causes of violence, but we actually can promote from within the ranks 200 more detectives
I have to get Alderman Sawyer back in here. And this was alluded to a little bit ago. There is an IG investigation that found a CPD officer participated in events and had ties to the extremist Proud Boys group. He's been suspended by the CPD but not fired. Should he keep his job, Alderman Sawyer?
No, and that's a problem. What I would do would have been fired him immediately. I don't care what the unions would do. I don't care what collective bargaining would do. We have to set a standard.
Although there is a process. There is a legal process that has to be followed.
I respect that, but at the same time, we have to draw the line once and for all and not tolerate this kind of hate speech, this kind of hate association. You have to set the standard. Even though they may very well get their job back, you have, as a leader, you have to draw the line and say, no, it cannot happen any longer.
Mr. Vallis, this is Officer Baker. Would you fire him, and would you prohibit any police officer from associating with any extremist or white supremacist group?
Yes.
And you would fire this officer?
Yes. Well, obviously, you have to follow due process, but the bottom line is, yes,
CPD
I would be in favor
did not
of firing
Lightfoot.
Well,
why?
That's absolutely not correct, Paris. A lot of your questions are laden with premises that are just belied by the facts. This was a case that came to the attention of CPD from the FBI. But unfortunately, the FBI did not provide the details of the statement that they took from this particular officer. So CPD literally had to start from scratch. They did that, and they put together a fulsome investigation of this individual, but didn't believe that they had enough evidence, because they didn't get all the evidence from the FBI, to be able to fire him. Of course, we should not hire, we should not support, we should not retain any officer that is associated with any hate group. No, but of course, we've got to hold on. Hold on, Mr. Johnson, please. Mr. Johnson, please. I know you want to mansplain up here, but you got to give me.
Which way are you going, sir? Which way are you going? Because you're down here, but you're not over here.
Okay. Mr. Wilson, would you weigh in?
Yeah. All right. Okay. So because the mayor here done talked 5 or 6 times, she the one got us into all this trouble. Right?
What about the specific issue, this officer? Should he be fired or should he keep his job?
Look, everybody has to be have a day in court, all right? If you have to be held accountable.
Wait, be quiet right now.
Don't you quiet it down, right? Because she's confused, you know? Mm-hmm. Right. So
don't
let a person finish, Ms. Mayor.
I don't let you, okay?
Let a person finish.
I'm talking to Mr. Vallis.
Well, you shouldn't be
telling
talking
treaty,
when I'm
trying
talking,
to treat right? me like I'm
she
some
should
child.
Should not be talking when I'm talking. All right.
Now we're talking.
Right. Let me just finish my point. Let me finish my point.
This is exactly what the people of Chicago don't want. People up here bickering. They want to hear our solutions to the problems. They want us to solve the safety issues, to have better schools. This is something we have to do. We have to stop all this nonsense.
There are a lot of problems that I want to get to. So let's talk about another one. Downtown, several high-profile corporations have left the city in the last several years, among them Boeing, Caterpillar, Citadel. The CEO of McDonald's says that his company is committed to staying here in Chicago, but city leaders can't ignore the perception problem that the city has around the country. Cam Buckner, how do you stem the tide of losses, and how do you attract businesses here?
Listen, I represent much of downtown Chicago in my state representative district. And what I hear from CEOs around the city is that they don't feel that there's any real predictability. There's an issue of safety, and they don't feel like this mayor and this administration listens to them. That's why they're leaving. That's why we're bleeding businesses. If Chicago is going to truly sustain, we have to grow. I have a plan to grow Chicago by 3 million people by the year 2030. That's going to take us actually working with our business community, cutting the red tape, and making sure that there's some real symbiosis between the people and the corporations that will help bring jobs to this city.
Let's get Mr. Green.
Well, I think this is an important issue, right? Because we got to stabilize the city of Chicago. We are the only campaign to move forward a plan on how we will revitalize the Mag Mile and turn it into a strip of experiences. We need to make sure that the Magnificent Mile in downtown is a place where people want to come and travel again so that we can create a tax base. And we're also going to do so all throughout our neighborhoods with mass investment. So it's important that we talk to and have a relationship with our CEOs. We can't tax him out of town like Brandon Johnson's quote-unquote budget plan he said he'd only want to do. We cannot continue to tax folks out of town. We have to make this a welcoming city for corporations and small businesses.
Mayor, I see, but I want to get Alderman Sawyer here. What about the neighborhoods? You have said you'd continue the mayor's Invest Southwest initiative. What specific policies would you institute to lure public and private investment to the west and south side?
As I stated, this has gone through various iterations. It started with Mayor Emanuel, now with Mayor Lightfoot. in the Sawyer iteration of it, we would make sure that we focus on our individual businesses in our 77 communities. Right now, I don't think we're paying quite enough attention to those all around the area. We have to make sure that each area is self-sustaining. They all have grocery stores. They all have entertainment areas. They all have professional services. They all have things for children and vibrant education institutions. We need to be focused on this. We have far too many areas on the south and west side in particular that are underutilized, neglected, and left just abandoned. We have to, when we talk about housing, we need to be putting it there. We don't need any more housing down in Fulton Market in the downtown area. Let's look at Englewood. Let's look at Lawndale, Garfield Park. Let's make some true investments in these areas where I have scores of uninhabited buildings, scores of lots that are vacant, and I don't want them to be, you know, gardens. I want them to have housing and be vibrant and be real parts of the neighborhood.
Right. Mayor Lightfoot, I know you wanted to weigh in first on that initial question about those losses, Boeing, Caterpillar, Citadel.
Well, I think what you also have to tell folks, which is about 400 new companies have either come to Chicago over the last 2 years or substantially expanded their footprint in the city. Why are companies like Google saying, we're going to make 3,000 to 5,000 new jobs in downtown Chicago? Why is Kimberly-Clark moving here, its headquarters? Why is Kellogg moving its headquarters here? And that doesn't even account from the other businesses that literally could go any place in the world, but they're coming here to our city, and the businesses that are here are substantially expanding their footprint. They're doing that because we have the most diverse economy. We've got a great pipeline of talent, 200,000 students every year in undergrad and graduate, and because we have the climate that is here that they know that this administration supports businesses. So losing any business is one too many, I give you that. But what we're seeing is an influx of businesses coming here, new people coming because of what's happening here in Chicago. And so tell that story.
All right, and Paul Vallis, let me modify this question for you. Loop occupancy rates are about 50% of what they were in 2019. Jamal Green mentioned retail vacancy along the Mag Mile. Right now, about 30%. Give me specific policies that you have that will reduce those rates significantly.
Well, look, there's three things you have to do. First of all, you have to provide public safety throughout the city, but obviously you have to provide public safety downtown. I think I looked at the 1st and 18th district, and there were 38 murders last year, where in 2019 there were five. I mean, clearly there's this perception, or maybe it's reality, that downtown is unsafe. And if you talk to everyone, and I've talked to all the business groups there, public safety is the number one issue. Number two, they just got pounded with property tax reassessments. After COVID and after the mitigations and the economic hit that they took, they got pounded with significant property tax increases with no phase-in, And then, obviously, there are businesses that still have not recovered from COVID. When we provided recovery from Katrina in New Orleans, we did two things with businesses. The first thing that we did with businesses was we covered the damage done by the hurricane. The second thing we did with businesses is to provide them financial support for their income loss. So those are things that you should note.
That a lot of those property tax increases were the result of reassessments from the assessor's office.
Right.
Brandon Johnson,
right.
Speaking of property taxes, you have proposed to keep them where they are, but reinstitute a corporate head tax for large employers, a tax on security trades, which has not gotten much traction when proposed in the past, an added real estate transfer tax over $1 million. What's to stop those Chicagoans from moving out of the city to avoid those taxes?
Well, look, here's the big problem. The politics of old that have left families behind is how we ended up in this mess. Look, Paul was the budget director during a time in which pensions weren't being paid. Look, everywhere Paul Vallis has been in charge of finances, he's been run out of the city. He mentioned New Orleans. The entire school district has been privatized there, where the loss of veteran teachers and black educators is unprecedented. And so what my plan does is very simple. We eliminate the debt in my first term while also making up to $1 billion of investment without raising property taxes. No one on this stage has put forth the plan because they're either lying or they're hiding the ball behind their back. And here's the thing. You can't run one of the largest economies in the world off of a bake sale. Look, I'm going to tell you the truth and always keep it 100. That's why I presented the plan so people can look at it. They can critique it. It's a living document. But in order for us to have a balanced budget that's better in a safe city, you have to invest in people. And that's what my budget calls for.
Nearby, Alderwoman King, in your ward. Can I just get to Alderwoman King, please? In your ward, Soldier Field. Subject close to my heart, the Bears.
Sure.
Assuming the Bears leave Soldier Field, what is your vision for the future of that stadium and that area on the lakefront, and how would you finance it?
first of all, I don't want to assume that the Bears will leave Soldier Field. That's another failed, you know, lack of collaboration. When you come at people in a combative way, you can't even have a conversation. So we need to have that conversation and to make sure that the Bears stay here first. And we need to lead the city with collaboration, or companies, teachers, officers, everybody's going to continue to leave the city. If the city is not safe and doesn't have good schools, people are going to continue to leave or not come back to the city. So we have to have a plan for that. We have a plan, again, that gets at the safety from a very immediate standpoint of the crime that's happening in everybody's face, but we also get at the root causes, the power of and. We can do both. We don't have to choose one or the other. We are the city of big shoulders.
Right.
We can both uplift our police and we can hold them accountable. They're not mutually exclusive.
Willie Wilson, let's go back to the neighborhoods on the south and west side. What would you do specifically to lure not just public but private investment to those neighborhoods?
Well, first of all, a couple of things. I want to ask a question. Not ask a question, I want to try to explain something to you. Downtown, in order to attract business, you got to lower taxes. In order to keep business, you got to lower taxes, all right? You got to stop the crime, all right? Lower taxes, keep people coming to shop. Keep them going to Oprah. Keep them going to Indiana, all right? Lower taxes. If you continue to raise taxes, you're running people out. We got to get a hold of the snatch and grab from Mission Avenue, the neighborhood the same way. Business is business. I'm in business, and I understand business. The rest of them are not in business up here, all right? So we have to deal with this whole situation to attract new business, keep the business here that we have here, keep the customers here. They're going to the business. Don't drive them out of town.
All right.
And we're going down.
All right, we need to go back to the field. Let's go to Joanna Hernandez, who is live in Logan Square. Joanna.
They're going to the business. Don't drive them out of town. Sorry, I'm going down.
All right, we need to go back to the field. Let's go to Joanna Hernandez, who is live in Logan Square.
Paris, thank you. And I want to start off by thanking Palenque for hosting us tonight. Now, this organization has been in the neighborhood for more than 60 years, providing resources to the brown and black communities in the area. Now, we've heard about some of the concerns they have here, and those topics continue to come up that have to do with gentrification, which this neighborhood has dealt with, and affordable housing. Now, we have here Cecilia Avecedo. She is a resident of Logan Square. She is a mentor and also a parent. Cecilia, what is your question?
Everyone deserves a home, but gentrification is a threat to people of color. Displacement creates new cycles of generational trauma, all for the profit of banks, developers, and investors. Gentrification is caused by demolitions that tear down affordable housing to build exclusive luxury constructions that increase property taxes. What three strategies will you use to help make Chicago move more welcoming for black and brown families?
Okay, I'll address that question to Cam Buckner.
Yeah, and thank you to Cecilia for that question. Listen, we know that we have a real affordable housing and a gentrification issue in Chicago. What my housing plan has called for is to make sure not that we just adhere to the Bring Chicago Home plan by increasing the real estate transfer tax on transactions of $1 million and more.
This is proposed by the Chicago Coalition
for the Homeless, right? But we actually got to be specific about how we do that, right? So we have to have money for permanent supportive housing. We got to put more money into the Trouble Building Initiative. We got to make sure that we are refunding the New Homes for Chicago program and doing work for single family rehabs. Because it's not enough just to bring Chicago home. You got to keep Chicago home. And the work that we need to do in our communities needs to be based on that. We need to do more about the alternative dwelling units across the city. We should put those on city land and begin to make Chicago a very dense city, once again growing our population, bringing down construction costs so people can live here and move here.
And on that note, Jamal Green, according to a study from DePaul, there is a need for 120,000 more affordable housing units in Chicago. How would you close that gap?
So some of the things that we talked about in our plan, first let me just say housing is a human right, and the administration must acknowledge that on day one. And we're going to move forth incentives for single-floor commercial buildings, right, and the new stores that are being built so that they can build floors on top. We're also going to make sure that we loosen the single-family ordinance so that we can have more conversions on top, as well as the basements can be garden units. And we got to have an economic engine, right? We move forward a plan to have a public bank in the city of Chicago. And a public bank can invest in public housing and more mortgage mortgages as well as small businesses, and all the profit that comes back from that bank goes right back to city services. So we need to make sure that we're building affordable housing and keeping folks there. So we also move forward a city loyalty tax credit for those folks who stay in their homes past 3 years. We'll give them 2% off of their taxes all the way up to 20
years.
So
I want to move to the issue of immigration. Brandon Johnson, the mayor has said that the city is at its limit right now, accepting migrants and asylum seekers from the border. We all know the dispute that's going on in Woodlawn with Wadsworth Elementary. What would you do to further accommodate migrants coming to Chicago?
Yeah, well, look, the fact that we have politicians around the country that are using people as a political football, that's actually quite sick and wicked. But what we need is an actual plan, right? And that's something that, as a public school teacher, I can tell you, I've put together a few lesson plans. And part of that plan really requires us to actually listen to the people who are here, right? And the fact that we've had a political economy that pits communities against one another, that's a problem. We have to make sure that we're investing in neighborhoods that have been here and then making sure that we're providing
should
the support services.
Should these migrants not be in Woodlawn, as that older person in that neighborhood has suggested?
What we should do, again, the plan is to make sure that the families who are here, that we support those families. That's why I passed the Just Housing Amendment as Cook County Commissioner, which eliminated discrimination against those who were seeking housing, particularly those who were formerly incarcerated. If we take care of the families that are here, it provides a more welcoming space for the families who are seeking refuge here. Here's the last thing that I'll say is this. I'm supported by Delia Ramirez. Cook County Hospital is where she was born. It's the same Cook County Hospital that provided me support at the Fantas Clinic because I had asthma. The fact that the city of Chicago was bringing people from 57 North, from Salus, Mississippi, or Central America, no one has to lose at the expense of someone else winning. And that's what you're going to have in a Brandon Johnson
administration. Mayor Lightfoot, you did say that the city is at its limit. What can you do to further accommodate more migrants coming seeking asylum here?
From day one, when Governor Abbott from Texas engaged in this horrible shipping of individuals like their freight, we stood up. Welcoming city means not just in good times. Welcoming city means in challenging times. So we've stood up 13 different shelters all across the city in neighborhoods that are as diverse as our city is without any issues. But we are reaching our limit. And the challenge is that while the federal government has paroled these people legally into our country, they haven't provided work permits. So I agree with mayors across the city that are facing, across the country, that are facing the same challenge. This is a national problem that demands a national solution. But meanwhile, we're going to do what we should do as a welcoming city. We've opened up these shelters. We provided them with food, with clothing, gainful activities. The children are in their schools. We've asked for more resources, both from the federal government, from the state, and we put our own money into that. That's what we have to do, and we have to continue to work with these folks who are coming for miles and in many instances months through the desert or through the jungle. They're traumatized. They're stripped of their resources when they get to the border, and many instances they're arriving here in dire psychological but also medical condition. We bonded together with Cook County, who's providing the health care services, the state, who's also providing resources, but we have to make sure that our federal government doesn't drop its responsibility
I need to move on to the issue of education. Alderman Sawyer, according to CPS, 40% of schools are deemed underutilized right now. 22 high schools have less than 250 students in their enrollment. You've expressed openness to closing schools once a moratorium on school closures lists in 2025. How do you do that in a way that doesn't roil the community as it did several years ago?
Well, several years ago, I was a part of a group that was working on how do we look at closing schools. It wasn't the fact that schools did not need to be closed. There should have been a process. What Mayor Emanuel did was eliminate the process. I was involved in that process several years ago with maybe a lot of people on this stage, including our dear friend Kieran Lewis. We were making sure that what we did if a school was to close is to provide services to that neighborhood, talk about what that school was going to look like, and maybe even possibly reopening that school when the time came. The problem is we need to have that conversation now. I support the moratorium until 2025, but let's start talking about this now. We have schools that are under 5% enrolled, 0% proficient in reading and math. We have to do better for our children. So these schools also don't have no extracurricular activities, no full complement of services. language arts, other things that students need to be successful. We want to make sure we do better.
Paul Vallis, can I bring Paul Vallis? What would you do with these severely under-enrolled schools? And by the way, noting that the CPS, according to the mayor's numbers, is coming up on a potential $550 million budget gap. What would you do with those under-enrolled schools, and how'd you pay for it?
Look, let me tell you what we did, and then that will guide what we'll do in the future. When I ran the Chicago Public Schools, when they were near bankruptcy and they had lost 115,000 students the previous 15 years, we pushed the money down to the local school level. All the schools became community schools, which meant they were open all the time, through the dinner hour, over the weekends, over the summer. We had close to 200,000 kids engaged. We brought the community-based programs on those schools. Third, we provided universal work study. Anywhere from 10 to 15,000 high school students were working year-round. The fourth thing we did was we expanded the Alternative Schools Coalition. The Youth Connection Charter School with its 22 community campuses were formed during that tenure. And we expanded magnet options. We put magnet school options in neighborhood schools, the 18 IB programs, the World Language Academy programs. Enrollment grew by 40,000. We had 125,000 more students than we had today. We had a fully funded pension system at 104%. I think I was Motorola's Man of the Year and Crane's CEO of the Year. And I have to respond because some comments have been made about me twice. And we left the school system with almost $1 billion in cash balances and 13 bond rating upgrades.
You did take a pension holiday one year, but I want to bring in Willie Wilson. I need to bring in Willie Wilson here. I mentioned that $550 million budget gap by 2025. How will CPS go about closing these expected future deficits?
Well, you got to use common sense. Right now, taxes are running families out of the city, so they have no kid to put into the school, all right? Crime is running people out of the city. So you're not going to fill those schools back unless you can lower those taxes and create new businesses and increase the revenue. But what I would do, I would take them and close those schools that only got 250 people in them, all right? And I would take them and sell them or rehab them, put affordable houses in there, create economic empowerment within the community, with people living in the community, construction, and get them back on their feet that way. Right now, they're just sitting there paying millions and millions of dollars a year. Last on that subject is that most of the kids that finished at Chicago Public School don't even know how to read or write, you know? So.
All right, Ken Buckner, I want to bring in, because you have said you want to keep those schools open. So what would you do with those underutilized schools?
It's 2023, and we're sitting here having a conversation in Chicago about how to close more schools, how to disinvest in more people and more communities. What's wrong with us? Seriously, listen, I authored the school closing moratorium. I actually did that to make sure that we had a runway to figure out what we can do to invest in our schools. It is almost 2025. We were close to that point, and we still have not done enough. Listen, we have to make sure that each school has a librarian, a social worker, and a nurse. We have to do the sustainable school work to make sure that our young people have opportunities. We have to make sure that we bring trades and vocational training back. And after that, we got to make sure that there are pipelines to employment. Because if we train our young people and don't give them jobs, it makes no sense. It's like having a light bulb with no light to put it in, right? We got work to do. But one more thing, Paris, please. Paul is saying that he's going to do what he did before. Please, let's not do that. What Paul did before was take pension payments and use them for operating costs in our schools. I was a kid who was in the district when he was running it. It's not okay. Let's not go back to the future.
All right, Sophia King, given the budget situation with CPS, what would you do with those underutilized schools?
Yeah, so we all know from our past that great schools drive great communities. So I would seek to bring great schools to communities and drive economic development. We can also use a tool called Opportunity Zones, which allows investors to put money into this vehicle and take it out tax-free in 10 years. That can drive housing on the south and west side and build communities around these schools. You can then take that incentive and the money that we make around that, increment that tax with TIF zones and build those schools. So I agree that we have to talk about bringing good schools. All the schools that we're talking about opening now and in other areas, they're already oversubscribed. So we know that the city needs good schools. Selective enrollment schools are oversubscribed. Our plan calls for bringing selective enrollments with a strong neighborhood component back to the neighborhoods. Let me finish. Back to the neighborhoods so that we can drive economic development and real community in those neighborhoods.
All right, Jim Green, given the fact that 40% of schools are deemed under-enrolled, so many schools have only 250 students, how do you keep those schools open?
First of all, it's not going to work with just, you know, closing schools or with Donald Trump's Opportunity Zone plan either. It is going to be making sure that we invest in every school institution throughout the city of Chicago. We have to move from enrollment-based formula to needs-based formula. And every school throughout the city needs the resources that they need. So we got to go to our state partners and say we got to change our formula and we need more money from the state. And talked about the public bank. That can be an extra stream of funding for our underfunded schools, and that will be a place where making sure that all schools have high quality where people want to send
their kids. Mayor and Paul, that's just very quickly, because I need to get to Bridgeport.
Okay. Well, you know, first of all, I've been mentioned three times, and I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to respond. But let me point out right now, we have 85 charter schools that are in substandard buildings because the school board, under pressure from the teachers' union, will not allow them to use public buildings. Let me point out that charter schools are public schools and they're not-for-profit schools. But they can't use those public buildings. So you have Manly High School with 67 kids and 27 faculty, yet you have charters of high schools in that same community with 300, 400 kids. They will not let them use the public buildings. Secondly, the state authorizes the creation of alternative schools for dropouts. They have a program called the Adult High School Program. And they will bring individuals who are put into those programs into the formula. So if you want to know how to occupy those closed or vacant buildings, why don't you allow the community to decide whether or not they want to bring some of those public charter schools, whose 96% of their student enrollment are Black and Latino, why don't you allow them to occupy those buildings and enroll kids from the neighborhood? And why don't you allow them to open alternative schools for the 30 or 40,000 kids who have, in effect, exited the system over the last 3 or 4 years?
Mayor Lightfoot, you want to weigh in here?
Well, I'm going to respond a little bit to this. I know you've been gone from the school system for a long time, but everything you said, why don't we do, we're doing it, Paul. We have alternative schools right now to make sure that we are giving those kids who maybe have had a rough start. They're called option schools. We have many of them. You ask about why don't we co-locate? We're doing that now. But here's the bottom line on the issue of under-enrolled schools. You cannot, given the scars that still linger from the closure of the 50 schools and the brutal way in which it's done, you cannot have this conversation whatsoever about first going into those communities, talking to them, showing them the data, and then asking them what they think makes most sense. And in many instances, what the community has already started to tell us is, we want this, this, and this. Please invest here. Let's think about opportunities for co-location. Let's think about opportunities for other things. But bottom line is, what CEO Martinez has done, and I fully support, is whatever the school is, we're going to have a baseline of math, reading, science, arts, and the other things that actually make schools fun and attractive.
Right.
But fundamentally, we've got to raise the population by doing exactly what we're doing in Invest Southwest, by bringing real jobs, opportunity, affordable housing, and amenities to these communities.
I'm going to get you in, Brandon.
What Paul Vallis is saying. He has literally been fired from every single city that he has worked in. And now he wants to be mayor of the city of Chicago?
All right, I need to get to Amanda Vinicky, who is live in Chicago's Bridgeport. We don't have much time, man. We just got to go right to the question.
And now he wants to be mayor of the city of Chicago.
Yes, I am here at the Bridgeport Art Center, and we're joined by community leaders, including those from organizations like the Bridgeport Alliance, the Chinese American Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community, the Chinese American Service League, and among their concerns are the rising cost of rent and taxes, violence, including in Chinatown, the environmental impact of industry moving near the the river, and then also access for immigrants to social services, including language barriers there. And then another biggie is education, including a near South High School. That is something that some residents have been agitating for literally decades. CPS does have a plan to build an $150 million facility on the site of the former Harold Ickes home, and David Wu with the Putak Center has a question about that.
Yeah, do you support the building of a new near South High School at its proposed location at 24th and State, or that it be built at an alternative site that doesn't affect CHA property, or not at all, that it shouldn't be built?
Okay, so this is a high school that a lot of members of the Chinatown community want in Chinatown. It's proposed just outside of Chinatown right now. Sophia King, your answer to that question.
So I think it should be built at an alternative site. Again, this school is already oversubscribed. Everybody's trying to get in because it's supposed to be a good, viable school. We have to have good, viable options all over the city, not just in certain places. So under a Sophia King mayorship, we would move selective enrollment with strong neighborhood components to the neighborhood, much like Kenwood High School, where Brandon sends his young kids. It has a neighborhood component in the high school, 7th and 8th grade selective enrollment. It's got test scores like the selective enrollment at Jones. We need to duplicate schools like that all over the city so that everybody has a viable option.
All right,
that's how you grow communities.
Brandon Johnson, you were bringing up Paul Vallis. You need to bring up your support. The teachers union supports you. Teachers unions have provided the bulk of your funding. You worked as a teacher. You were part of the teachers union. Are there name specific policies for me that you differ from the CTU on?
Well, first of all, I'm grateful to be supported by working people in the city of Chicago. Whether you are a teacher, whether you are a crossing guard, a home health care provider, a child care provider, the fact that I represent the interests of working people, that's what the city of Chicago deserves, because for too long, the interests of corporations have been represented. When we were fighting for the progressive income tax, which would have funded transportation, health care, housing, jobs, over 70% of the city of Chicago said that the ultra-rich should pay their fair share in taxes. And that's what we have to focus in on.
The question is, where do you differ from the CTU?
If you're asking me if I do not believe in public education, what kind of question is that? Look, public education at the expense of the state, after all, is a Negro idea. Those are the words of W.E.B. Du Bois. So, yes, I believe we should have fully funded schools. Yes, I believe that workers should be protected. Dr. King said that if the labor rights movement and the civil rights movement were to ever collide, what enormous potential we would have. I am the manifestation of the dreams of our ancestors, raised by a pastor, raised by a public employee. If someone is mad at the interests of public accommodations, then they are mad at those who are
put forth policies across a various sort of spectrum of issues, but I need to move on
to
another issue.
And so affordable housing, transportation,
I want to move on to transportation.
Thank you.
A recent unscientific WBEZ survey found that riders of the CTA are sick of ghost buses and trains, the filth and the violence. How would you fix these in your second term?
Well, I'll tell you what we've already started to do to fix those issues. Number one, we started with talking to the unions, both of the bus and the rail, to find out from them what are they seeing every single day, because those workers are on the front lines. And so we listened to them. One thing that they said is, we want more uniformed police on the stations, in the buses, and that's precisely what we've done. They also said that we want to make sure that we've got people who are riding the trains, that are looking out for dangers, and we want more security for our personnel, and we've done that. One of the things that the CTA found is a lot of the problems that manifest themselves later on the rails start with people jumping, fare jumping. So they added more security, canine patrols at the fare box to make sure that we eliminated people from jumping the rails. The other thing that we've done is made sure that we are dealing with the homeless challenge that we find on the CTA. Look, during the pandemic, when ridership was substantially down, the homeless that had been on the rails for quite some time didn't leave because they didn't have the morning rush. They didn't have the afternoon rush. So we're working with advocates to make sure that we're addressing those issues.
Folks, we have to leave it there. So we are out of time.